Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Actually, the 25th of August, 2024. This show is being recorded a couple of days late because my Aunt Linda died. I was unable to make our own recording on Thursday. So Christine graciously said she could record today. So we are. So it's the 25th.
Not on camera.
It's the 25th of August, 2025. This is Jim Hetch from Digital Always Media, Christine Chappinger from Sites Without Walls, and Christine, it's been a hell of a week. I mean, seriously, last week was a brutal, stressful, one of the problems with working in the tech world is you never actually get time off, even when you need time off.
Yeah.
It's brutal. So last week was crazy, and all apologies for not being able to be in the studio at the right place at the right time, but the world didn't conspire that way, and I still had to work, damn it.
I'm sorry about that, and I'm sorry for your Aunt Linda. I know that you wrote a beautiful eulogy, though.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so what happened? So some of the stuff that we're reporting on is going to actually feel a little bit old to us, and we're going to be putting in stuff that may have happened in between when we would have recorded and the present, just because it feels relevant to the show. But anyway, let's get going. And the first thing you ought to do, maybe even before letting the rest of this episode play, if you're on a desktop, update your Chrome browser. Google was hit by another zero-day exploit. This one, which is conveniently titled, Google conveniently titled stuff for us, CVE-2024-7971. There'll be a test on this later. Yep. It plays with Chrome version 8's JavaScript engine and creates what's called a confusion flaw. I'm not sure what that does. Christine, you want to take it from here?
You know, I wish you could. No, the confusion flaw is just... Seems to be basically, they're able to confuse the browser using third-party JavaScript libraries and then get access. So it is a super duper must update now security issue. Chrome's emergency update contains 38 security fixes, including some others that are low severity. But this one is a super important one. So if you have not updated your Chrome or it hasn't automatically updated in the last week?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, more importantly, this was discovered on August 19th, which was almost a week ago.
Yeah. So you want to make sure that it is updated because it leaves your entire system vulnerable.
Okay. So that's the very...
They're exploiting a flaw in the code execution targeted on Windows, Mac, and Linux. So it's even a Linux device has to make sure they update Chrome. Usually Linux don't think they have to update, so...
Okay. So anyway, that's story number one. We put that one up front just because you do want to deal with this. By the way, if you're on Mac OS, you also want to deal with this, provided you're running a Chrome browser.
Any update. Chrome browser anywhere, update now.
Okay. Speaking of vulnerabilities, this was a really weird one, and a lot of SEOs can be forgiven for being confused, feeling flippity-floppity, or being downright angry. Google did the August 2024 core update that launched on August 15th. That actually launched a couple hours before we recorded our last show. We're going to be talking about the core update in just a moment, but just after the core update hit, so did a search ranking bug that impacted a large number of results that they didn't actually get worked out for, like, what, 72, 96 hours?
Almost 5 days, 4.5 days.
The update happens. And you have all the publishers in the world who had lost ranking between September and the September and the March updates. And you have, you know, all the SEOs, everybody looking, oh my God, what's this update going to do to us? And there's a ranking bug. You don't know if what you're seeing is real or not.
Yeah, and they announced on August 16th that they confirmed there was a ranking bug. So my guess is it was going on before August 16th. So if you saw volatility in your GSC, like, or your GA right before the update, it is possible it's this. I haven't gotten any confirmation. I don't think I've seen Barry Schwartz confirm either. If they said we should, the appearance of it should have been gone, but they didn't say whether that meant they fixed what happened and now it'll show in your GSC, or if they just meant that it's no longer causing an issue that's visible. So I don't know which one that means. So I've been trying to get confirmation from John. We don't have that yet. So, but it did end. Yeah.
But it's really hard to assess what it was because we're in the middle of a core update, and what you're seeing at Google Search Console or Google Analytics could be where your website should be more or less, or it could be an indication your website isn't in flux. I guess you know that based on your website's behavior, but if you got any ambiguity happening, this is a really uncomfortable time.
Well, yeah, also because John has now come out and stated that, John Mueller from Google, has come out and stated that you should not take anything that's going on right now, like with core update running, as a done deal until it's done running. And normally during the update, you get a pretty good idea of where you're going to sit unless they do like a major reversal or something. So in this case, we don't know if the ranking bug has an effect and if it's showing and if we have to wait till the end of the core update to see everything. I don't know. So if you're down right now, you know, be aware you may be down from the core update, but we won't know for sure until it's all over, which would be about 2 weeks. Yeah.
Now, if you're up suddenly, no matter what, you don't want to be making any sudden changes. It's probably not worth making any sudden changes right now anyway until things level out after another couple of weeks. But if you're up suddenly, remember, you could see a reversal of fortune anytime, and it's really tempting to go, especially if I'm down for a while, it's really tempting to go out and start screaming, I'm up again. Careful, especially to whom you're speaking to, especially with the client, because that could reverse just as quickly.
Yeah, we have seen reversals. The people have posted reversals on Barry's Twitter, and people have gotten like what looks like, complete recoveries, and then it lost like 70% again. But I will say during the core update, I was following a site that I would be auditing, and they did that frequently. They get a big boost, and it lasts for a few days, and then it would go down, and then they get a big boost, and it would go down. So I think that's them tweaking the core update algorithms. It's just unfortunate. One of the ones I saw that I'm just helping out, they're not a client. They're just someone with one of the solo entrepreneurs that got smushed in October, November, and then March, April, or September, October. They're seeing all recovery of at least the March, April drop, and they haven't gone way down, but they have leveled off and gone down about 10%. So hopefully that'll all be corrected.
So I just onboarded a new client. Doesn't matter what industry they're in, but they were asking me to basically describe SEO and where SEO is at, and I'm thinking about core updates right now. So one of the things I mentioned is Google updates itself frequently. Often it updates a piece of its algorithm, or it tweaks its algorithm a little bit because it wants to improve one facet of search or another. In fact, right now we're having what's called a core update, which is what really perked this new client's ears up. And they asked what it was all about. I tried explaining a core update, and that's often harder than you might imagine, especially to somebody you're just starting to work with. And I tried to use a baking analogy. Baking involves a lot of folding. You got to, make a layer and fold it in, and stir a bit more and fold it in, stir a bit more and fold it in. And that's often what a core update is like. Google might introduce one, two, or three changes to its algo stack in the core update, and then introduce a few more weeks later that completely changes the way it looks at any group of statistics that makes up its rankings.
Yeah, the core of data is all the core ranking signals. And for those who don't know what those are, Google does have a set of documents called ranking systems. And you can look there and it explains it much better. Yes, you're right, because they can be tweaking anything in that update, anything that's in a core ranking signal, like related to your content, related to your technical. I often see huge technical issues related to core updates when I do recoveries. So, don't assume anything until it's over. Also, it's in the previous core updates. I don't know for sure yet on this one because we haven't evaluated it yet. It's usually applied at the keyword level. So you want to check which keywords dropped, and they'll lead you to the pages that dropped.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do that in Search Console, but again, we're almost positive what we're seeing in Search Console today is real and reflective of Google's impression of your website. We're almost sure of that.
Yeah. Just a reminder to people, once the update is started, or even usually a few weeks before, any changes you make will not have anything, will not help you during this update.
It has to run through.
Yeah, it takes Google about 3 or 4 months to crawl everything it needs to crawl in its index and then reassess and then create the update. So if you just made changes a week or two before this update, that's also likely not to have any effect. Sometimes during an update, they will do a secondary crawl that they did and update some things, but still you have to have been usually about a month out or more before. Your changes have to be in about a more before it'll affect the update. So, but you can start planning for the next one. John Mueller did say no reason not to start now. Personally, though, I would not start until this is over because you have to assess what's wrong. And you can't assess what's wrong if you're making changes now. You need to see what your site looks like after all this is over.
And again, this is if you're getting quote unquote hit by the
core update. If you're getting hit, yes.
If this is normal business for you, if you didn't even notice there was a core update that happened, and a bunch of you out there, you won't even notice something happened because
several clients
didn't affect you at all.
Yeah.
In that case, it's business as usual. Keep improving your websites. Keep improving your content. Keep improving site structure, and keep improving. Importantly, keep improving internal link structure and paying special attention to the anchor text you're using in your internal link structure. Keep doing that stuff. And core update or not core update, you're probably going to be doing well for your website. But as Christine was saying, if you're going to make a whole bunch of changes just because the core update happened and you've lost ranking and you're all scared about it, that's probably not only a bad use of your time, but actually a detrimental use of your time because that's going to come back and haunt you later.
Yeah, and also if you do have first of all, if you lose like 10% or 20% of your traffic during this time, most likely not related to core updates. Core updates are pretty severe. Usually 40, 50, 70, 80, 90% of your traffic is gone, organic traffic in Google. But another thing you can do is you can put in Bing Webmaster Tools, and you can see, did you lose the same amount of traffic with Bing? Because Bing's not running, obviously, a Google core update. So if you don't see the same drops, then you know that there's probably a core update. Otherwise, it might be something else. And the other thing is get someone outside your company to audit it. I do site audits all the time and do it. I'm not promoting myself, I'm saying, but I do them all the time. And I see by the time people get to me, they've done it like an internal thing. And then they've been like through four or five other things. And they get to me like a year later, 10 months later, and then they're running out of money. So find someone who does site audits and get them to do a real audit. And as we know from our stories this week, I'm just going to throw it in here right now. Martin Split said automated tools are not audits, and don't consider those as audits. I've been saying this for a long time. They're monitoring tools. They're not audit tools.
So we're going to jump to that story, to Martin Split story in a second. I thought that was actually really interesting what he said, and I'm glad he said that. But before we get there, there's kind of a sad story that came up. It's core update related. So there's been three major core updates in the last 12-month period, September 2023, March 2024, and now the one that we're currently experiencing, August 2024. Inside of the September 2023, or just running just like moments before the core update dropped in September 23, and as part of the March 24 core updates, was something called the helpful content update. And publishers all over the place were whacked by the Confluent helpful content update for a variety of reasons, many of which Google itself admits now were mistakes. There was this one financial app that was doing really well. It was building itself quickly with great traffic being delivered from Google until sometime around September 2023 when it all just vanished. Called Hard Bacon. It was based in Quebec, province of Quebec in Canada, and they were able to hold out. Even though they lost like 80-85% of their traffic, they were able to hold out until August the 14th, Wednesday, August 14th, when they filed bankruptcy papers, bankruptcy protection papers, laid off all their staff. On August 15th, Google's core update hits, hoping to, you know, maybe alter some of the mistakes that were made in the March and September core updates. Hard Bacon recovers a good 65-70% of that lost traffic the day after it declares bankruptcy.
Yeah, although
that's brutal.
It's totally, it's brutal. I would like to just put this out there. Google, if any of you are listening, on spam updates, I get taking away 90% of people's traffic, but on these updates now, where someone has a technical issue, or they didn't do their site architecture well, or their linking's not good, or your content isn't up to what you think is snuff, taking away 90% of people's traffic and then taking a year to return it, it's just they can't survive. So this guy said, and also mentally, so he filed, but he hadn't signed the papers yet, I believe. And he said that he doesn't even know if he has it in him to try to keep going, because they've just been through the most brutal 11 months in their history, obviously, because they declared bankruptcy. And he may just go ahead and, you know, go forward with it and let someone purchase it, because he doesn't think he can go through this anymore. And I hear that from clients a lot. I even hear it from big corporations. So I worked for one at one point a few years ago. It was like, we're done with Google. We don't care anymore. And they pulled all their Google ads. They're one of the top buyer of ads on Google. So I would say that these kind of things that destroy companies really aren't necessary, because the original reason you destroyed a company over an update was because they were doing spam tactics. And yeah, I get that. That's appropriate. But when you're talking about these kind of things, they don't even know why they're recovering. They don't even know what happened to them.
One of Google's problems here is like when you maintain the largest information archive that's ever existed ever, it's hard to test outside of real time. You can have as many test environments as you want, but the actual real live web with the chaos and the changes and the just the sheer size of it, with all the archaic old links out there that you can never account for in any test environment, the web is just too random to recreate. In a sterile environment, Google could only really test a massive update on its systems on the live web, or its version of the live web.
But the suppression that they give this site is there.
Yeah, and the turnaround time is what I'm... Yeah. I can even see the suppression. I can even see that. This is what we had to do to get to the next level. But the turnaround time to correct mistakes and the lack of information that individuals have what those mistakes might be. Now, for us, that's great. That keeps SEOs employed. Wonderful. Which, you know, chaos is our safety. Chaos is our safety net. But I feel so bad for these people.
I do, and they're not the only ones.
No. They're just such a present example of it.
Yeah, there was some people I helped from the March April who had also been hit in September. Which is some free hours to take a, you know, brief look at their sites to see if I could help them identify their issues. Because most of these are solo entrepreneurs, you know, bloggers, things like that, who don't have the money for a full audit. And, you know, one that I was working with, they look like they're getting a recovery, but they had to take a job delivering pizza 2 weeks ago. It's because they went from 35,000 visits a day to 200. That's what I mean by the severity of the suppression. Like, you can make your point in taking away 50% of the traffic, you know, not take away 90% of people's traffic and then have it sit there for a year. This is the second worst one I've seen, I think, because Penguin was 2 years and then to recover, took 2 years to recover. Many companies closed. But in this case, you know, these solo entrepreneurs, these smaller sites, they tend to rely on Google's traffic much more heavily than like a major corporation.
And that brings us to the crappiest piece of business advice we have to give. And it's a reality. I hate giving this advice, but it's the truth. If your business depends entirely on Google traffic, then your business isn't sound. Now, saying that, I understand that there's a lot of businesses out there, mine included, that depends on Google providing strong traffic. If Google didn't provide strong traffic, the expertise I have around Google would be useless. So I'm in the same boat. But the truth is, our businesses are not entirely sustainable unless we can step beyond Google. Which,
yeah,
of course,
you have
is
to
my,
be able to do
my SEOs need to learn about Bing. SEOs need to learn about DuckDuckGo. SEOs need to learn about Baidu. SEOs need to learn about AI. Even need to learn about OpenAI and signals that will help websites get links. Because it's all about driving traffic to our client sites. They don't even care how it gets there, as long as it's the traffic they want.
Yeah, very true. I'd also advise, I wrote this in a LinkedIn post this week. If you're a small site, get an audit once a year so you can avoid issues like this 90% of the time. Sometimes Google comes out with something from left field and no one knows it's coming. And if you're a major corporation, you should at least be doing it twice a year, if not every quarter, because there's a lot of cruft that builds up on sites. And most of the time, like I said, when I do a core update recovery, it's technical. Which is also why I have an issue with so much like suppression, 90% traffic loss because you messed up technically is kind of, I think, severe. Yeah, definitely get an audit a couple times a year because that way then you can help yourself not wind up in one of these situations. Not always, but at least most of the time.
Now, when you do get that audit at least once a year, and, you know, this is also a little bit of difficult advice because let's face it, audits aren't cheap.
Real ones are not. You're right.
And for small businesses, I mean, is this just another cost they have to carry to do business on the web? Well, quite possibly. And so to get around that, people came out with automated auditing software. And there's lots of it out there. I use SEMrush as an example. SEMrush is Ahrefs, Sitebulb. All of these things give automatic audits of websites and will give hundreds and hundreds of different points. Based on their interpretations of Google, Bing, and such as algorithms. Martin Split from Google just the other day quite rightly noted this often isn't the advice website owners need. It's just stuff that automated software notices and ticks off for one reason or another.
Exactly. Also, there's a lot of stuff that the automated software would never see. So and every audit, I always tell my clients, I'm estimating I'll have it by this date, but there could be a week difference in there because when I do the final audit, I go back through and look for anything I might've missed. They do all the big stuff first and all the common stuff and then work my way down. But often, you know, in that final review, I'll find some weird anomaly, just like one piece of data that leads me down an entire rabbit hole of issues for the website. You know, so the auditing tools will never ever see that. That's why you need a human reviewer. A human reviewer like myself and like you, Jim, we use tools like Screaming Frog and Sitebulb to, you know, crawl the website and show us what might be wrong. But as the auditor, you have to help determine it. You also have to chase down those things to see if there's anything else beneath it, any other issue. Like I had one time where I did the screenshots. I always do screenshots of the website to make sure everything's showing as it should. And I found out that the cart had $340,000 worth of goods in it. And then another cart had $250,000 worth of goods. And these are $40 products, right? I'm like, what? So go through it and find out that the developer didn't use buttons to add to cart. They used links. And Google was able to create full carts when it crawled. So it was giving out all these thousands of links that didn't need to be crawled, creating carts that didn't need to be crawled, and probably messing with their systems quite a bit on the back end of trying to track what's going on the website.
Those are some awful abandoned shopping cart stats, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And so nobody would see that with an auditing tool. You see that with like Screaming Frog and Sitebulb and the screenshots that I looked at. So you really have to be careful about using those tools. Also, mostly they're just monitoring tools. Just looking like, do you have 404 errors? Do you have, you know, titles? Do you have meta, you know, descriptions? Are they too long? Are they too short? Stuff like that. Those I do look at, but we look at so much more than that. And also for good news for a small business, unless it changed this year, so double check, but you usually should be able to write it off on your taxes, the audit, one audit a year on your taxes on a small business here in the United States. I don't know about in Canada, but that's where Jim is. For anyone who doesn't know that.
I'm sure people have heard of him from Canada by now.
Just making sure we have new listeners. So yeah, so Martin's right. Those tools are good for monitoring, and they should call themselves monitoring tools. But if you're a site owner and someone gives you a spreadsheet list that looks like it was output from a tool, that is not a site audit.
No.
And that is not probably going to help you a great deal. And it definitely won't help you recover from a downturn.
Further to this, the site auditor should understand that every website, the human site auditor understands that every website is different, and there's a reason that things happen. Things that get noted in automated site audits may or may not be relevant to the website, to the actual website in question, or to the issue that they're having, but it has been noted. The trick with the human auditor is they're able to figure out what is and isn't relevant and prioritize it. This is your real problem, and these are things that you're going to want to work on.
Right, and it will have the most impact. And simple things like title tags, right? If it says it's too long, but I see that the only reason it's too long is you appended your business name to the end of the title tag.
Yeah.
You don't have to change all that. That's not important. If someone sees that, great. If they don't see it, doesn't matter. But if you have a title tag that's too long and I notice it's cutting off your product name and halfway through, then
that's
maybe,
a problem.
Yeah, we want to fix that. Or it doesn't have any reason people would click. Things like that, because your title tag and descriptions are basically your signs on the front of your store, and you want to bring people into your store. So that takes a lot of human interpretation and for prioritization, but also for what has impact. You know, if I just say title tag's too long, well, you'll go fix all those and then get no impact because all it was your site name at the end of the title.
Yep. And if you're doing it, that's your time. If you are recommending it to a client, that's their time. Either way, time is money. It's opportunity.
Yes.
And you want to maximize. We only have a little bit of it each day, honest to goodness. And let's face it, the less we have to devote it to work, the better. For real. If you're going down a red herring path and doing a whole bunch of unnecessary work, that's time that you really could have spent enjoying the summer before it's over.
Very true. And also, the reason I tell people to get an outside auditor is the SEO team you have didn't notice the issue. That's not because you have a bad team. It's just they're not trained in noticing specific issues that a site auditor is trained in over years of experience, especially of noticing that are a problem because they understand how the algorithms work with your website. So that's another reason you want to go outside your company.
Or to be quite a jerk about it, maybe you do have a bad team and they don't want you to know that.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. It is possible.
And it's really horrible if you're the one who discovers that the SEO team doesn't know what they're doing, because then you got to rat out one of your colleagues and you really don't want to do that.
No, I always blame it on process.
Well, the allegiance is owed to the client.
Yes, it is. Yeah, we're their advocates.
It's always owed to the client. Even, yeah, it's always owed to the client, and it does sometimes make sticky situations. Okay, where are we going from here? If you're Pavel Durov, the founder of the Telegram app, you're not going anywhere. You were arrested.
You're having a very bad day.
you're having a bad couple of hours, I'm sure, until your lawyer gets you out of jail. But he was picked up as he was traveling through France on an arrest warrant for a preliminary police investigation. Drug trafficking, fraud, and organized crime across the Telegram social media app.
And this is based on the European Union's recent implementation of the Digital Services Act, which is meant to protect users from issues online. And since Telegram has been under criticism in Europe for a long time for its failure to moderate, for allowing extremists, you know, in the United States, a lot of white nationalists like the platform, because there's no moderation, it's encrypted. Makes it difficult for, you know, people who are checking into kind of some of the bad people to get their information. So so right now he's been arrested. I don't think he's out of jail yet. And he's from Russia, by the way. And the social media platform Telegram, although not as widely used in the United States, is used frequently overseas. And it's used heavily in the Ukraine war. So that's another reason they wanted to address this. So anyway, if you use Telegram, there's no effect on Telegram just yet, but there probably, I imagine, will be something coming down the line.
Okay. So there is a law working its way through the California legislature hoping to regulate development of AI. It's SB 1047, or the, trying to find the you know, they always have fun names of acts. This is the Safe and Secure Innovation for Frontier Artificial Intelligence Wow, the Safe and Secure Innovation for Frontier Artificial Intelligence Models Act. SSIFAIMA for short.
I found a new use for AI, naming bills.
Yeah, coming up with that. Don't let engineers do it. They can't do that either.
That's a point. So
in a new letter, to an open letter, OpenAI Chief Strategy Officer Jason Kwan insists that AI regulation should be left to the federal government and not be committed by state governments.
I don't understand,
given the nature of how, you know, network computer systems work.
I agreed when I first read it, then I read the critique, and I think I agreed with the critique more, which is California is the ninth largest economy in the world, and you don't have to be in California to be affected by the act. So you have to abide by it if your users come from California. And the chances are users coming from California are pretty likely, especially a U.S. company. So I do understand that this has the power almost of like a federal law, but doesn't. And the federal laws are taking so long to come. So I did say it first, or maybe they're right, but I think the critique is probably more right. It'll have a very big effect on making sure that the AI that comes out is safe, and they have sets of parameters people have to meet to roll out the AI and to make sure that it's not going to harm people. The interesting thing is Sam Altman publicly promotes all these kind of bills and then privately fights against them. So right now OpenAI is fighting against it, saying it'll slow their progress. But you know what? I don't really have a problem with that. Slowing progress is not always a bad thing. Sometimes you need to slow progress to make sure things are safe.
I think there's a couple of things to note in the last sentences of Sam Altman and any of the AI companies. I'm sure will say one thing publicly and another thing privately. It's much like greenwashing. And I'm sure they do want some form of regulation, mostly to keep their rivals in check. Not that they want it to apply to them personally. But I really do. If there's a patchwork, what if the fine folks of Nebraska pass an AI regulation, and then the folks in Arkansas do the same thing, and people in Hawaii and Alaska, and just why don't we throw in New York State just for the sheer size of numbers there too? And now we have a patchwork of different regulations that all have to be adhered to, while trying to race China, Russia, European companies and everybody else who are already operating under regulated systems, no doubt, but at least they're operating under a national framework rather than a patchwork framework. That's what I'm worried about looking at this.
See, I am and I'm not, because the basics for this law are things like pre-deployment safety testing, whistleblower protections for employees at AI labs. These aren't things that specifically are going to cause the AI to slow down. It's just that now they have to make sure it's safe. So I do agree that you don't want a patchwork quilt, but EU has different laws in the United States, right? UK has different laws in the EU and the United States. So
and I'm telling you straight up, this is causing a problem for me. I live under Britain and America have different copyright laws. I live under the British system because I'm in Canada. You live under the American system because you're in America. Not only do we see completely different content on Netflix, I don't have AI overviews in search results in Canada. They don't have AI overview in search results in Europe. You might think that's a great thing. You might think it's a bad thing. I think I'm being left behind in one way or another because I can't see what my major, what the major market I work with is seeing, unless I, you know, use a proxy server or something. But it makes a difference. The legal framework, having different frameworks in different jurisdictions, makes a real difference.
It does, but they already deal with that. Like, that's not new. Like, every corporation
They deal with it by not letting wide groups of people see stuff or experience stuff. That's how they deal with it.
No, just in general.
There's regulation on Facebook and Twixter and news in Canada. And so what did the platforms do? They just cut off all news in Canada. And now you cannot get news stories via social media.
That's a little different. That's a beef that
it's patchwork regulation.
The government, but it's a beef they have with the government. That's a little different
it is a beef they have with my
government. They're punishing you, and they're trying to force Canada to do what they wanted.
But it's patchwork. It's an example of the ramifications of patchwork legislation on what's inherently an international network.
Yeah, I still think
it's. And I'd worry about that. And I'd worry about that in the States if you try to regulate the internet state by state by state by state.
I agree. It should be federal. But also, I don't have a problem with California putting out the law because most of these companies are in California. And so most of the laws are basic safety. It'd be like saying that Facebook doesn't have to worry about child exploitation images in X country. But the US already says that they do have to. So they have to do that. So it's kind of like, instead of worldwide, it's statewide. But these aren't particularly restraining things. You know, make sure you test it and it's safe before it goes out. It kind of should be the protocol for everybody anyway. The problem is we have AI operating unsafely, especially at the urging. And we know from people inside of OpenAI that they are very concerned about how Sam Altman is doing things. And they do not think he's doing it ethically. That's from them, not necessarily saying you and I think that. Or we might think that, but we're not taking an opinion. But so it's the AI, the bill is to prevent disasters. You know, like they call it a reckless race for dominance. And having to test your models, having accountability if your models go badly, making sure that when you do something new in the training data, that the training data is appropriate to be trained on. It's also not stolen. Things like that are, I think, pretty basic. You know, we're not talking about regulations like my dad helps build hospitals that the doorway has to be exactly this many inches wide. And if it's not, you fail inspection, right? We're not talking about that. We're just saying, hey, you have to have some basic safety in mind. And they want to keep racing forward at breakneck speed without having to do any of that. And Sam Altman has bucked that at every trend, including originally getting rid of his original non-financially invested board, right? So I don't have a problem. We can agree to disagree on that. But I do agree with you that we definitely need a federal regulation, but we're going into an election right now, and that's not going to happen for, you know, 6 months or so, because we have to have the new Congress bring it in, because anything you do now won't get passed by the end of the year. So I do think in the stopgap in the meantime, I think it might be a good thing, but as long-term, you're right. It can't be a patchwork.
So Perplexity is about to cross the AI ad barrier. As far as I know it, so far, there is no AI engine that is pumping out pay-per-click ads or pay-for-placement ads. Perplexity is about to do that as of the beginning of Q4, which I believe starts October 1st-ish, in 15 key categories: arts and entertainment, finance, food and beverage, health, technology, videos, etc. I'm sorry, there'll be video ads. I'm able to run on desktop or mobile. It'll be interesting seeing how Perplexity starts to understand the audience who's looking at these ads.
Yeah, also, I prefer to call these summarization engines because there's really no such thing as an AI engine. They're just summarizing what they trained on. So I don't know. Are people going to like getting ads in the middle of Perplexity? We'll see. I'm going to guess probably not. But they're going to have to try to make money somehow. So,
just to let you know, that's coming. And I think it was even Sam Altman himself who said, I really don't. Was it Altman who said he was terrified of the idea of ads, of an ad-driven AI engine?
Yeah, except they're not AI engines. Let's just make sure. There's not AI
Just
search
not
engines.
just to I didn't call it a search engine. I called it an AI engine on purpose. It doesn't let's not go with tangents.
He doesn't want ads, he says, but he says things and then changes his mind, like he wasn't gonna do
Well, indeed.
A search based product. So and he's doing that now, so we'll see.
You even do it yourself. There you go. It's impossible not to.
I know, it's a summarization engine. I coined that term. I want that to be I want to be famous for that term. you want to move into disturbing territory?
Yeah, I'm going that way. Minecraft is really cool. Although, you know, the Microsoft body, you can see the writing on innumerably made endless walls. But Minecraft is way cool. But there are now more 7 to 9 year olds in the U.S. on Twixter, on X, than kids playing in the Minecraft universe. And maybe that shouldn't be a disturbing stat at all, but it's kind of weird.
It is disturbing. Okay, first of all, researchers call these kids, the 7 to 9 year olds, iPad kids, because they've had access to a digital tablet since birth. Wow.
Yeah, sure. They don't know other world except the interactive screen.
Yeah, and 31% of preteens in the U.S. use the X platform. The reason I think that it's possibly a bad thing is because you and I both know that Musk allows porn on there. He allows hate speech. He allows white nationalists and Nazis to have free reign. I don't know if you want your 7 to 9 year old exposed to that. And the reason they said that they're exposed to it isn't that the parents don't care or anything like that. That they don't know that they block the popular apps for kids, you know, like Facebook and stuff, but they don't think of Twitter as an app that they need to block. And often they're actually getting it on their parents' phones. And I would say of all the social media platforms I wouldn't want my 7 year old on, it would be probably X. Because we
I don't
know
think
that
I'd Facebook, want my kid on any social media platform.
No, I agree. I wouldn't actually, truthfully, I don't know how many people know this. We say it from time to time. The people that run these companies, like their kids go to schools where they don't have access to computers at school until they're in high school because they don't want them affected by digital. So your 7 to 9 year old using social, yeah, that's dangerous anyway. But Twitter has a particular unrestrained interface and the person who owns it promotes some of the worst things online. So I probably would make sure that you block that from your child getting access to it, especially because they're using it even more than teens are using it even more than Reddit. Which surprised me. So,
I haven't been on. I have a Twitter account or a Twixter account, but I don't use it very often. I don't go there very often. I found it toxic for the last 4 or 5 years, and I honestly, God, don't know why anyone uses that platform anymore.
I use it, but I have reasons for it. So, research and stuff.
So, what does what do you think Andreessen Horowitz, Saudi Prince Alawid bin Tal al-Assad, Jack Dorsey, 8BC, Joe Lonsdale, Unipol Psi SPA, and P. Diddy? What do you think these folks got in common?
I have an answer to that, but I will let you tell our audience what the connection is.
They've all been revealed to be investors in Musk's takeover of X, of Twixter. In court, he was forced to open the books, open the list of shareholders involved in X Holding Corporation, and these were some of the people named in it. He took it over. He jumped on it on October 2022. He was forced to make good on the brag that he'd buy it for $45 billion. And these are the people who helped him out. I don't know if they understood how much money they would lose personally, because I don't think that they're going to see their investment come back again. In fact, I understand that the Twitter buyout is now considered one of the worst buyouts of all time.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
No, that's that. I read the story and I didn't go much further than that. I think I might have only read the headline, but that makes sense.
The mergers and acquisitions departments of the firms that invested the $13 billion, I think it was $13 billion, might have been $12 billion, into Twixter, they had to drop their mergers and acquisitions employees' salaries by 40%. It's such a drain on their books.
Hold on. They dropped all this money into Twixter. And because they did that, they had to lower their employees' salaries.
In the mergers and acquisitions, yes, because it's such a drain on their books. Because even though they're making their interest payments, it just keeps going down in value, and there's no way to sell it or force a sale right now. So they are stuck with the musk herring. That's not what goes around your neck, albatross around the neck. And so they had to cut their mergers and acquisitions. Staff,
you might call it a red pill herring.
Yes, exactly. At least 40% on some of the ones that they reported on. So sorry for the M&A guys, because they probably had no say in this. But
I am too. I mean, I don't often feel sorry for those people, but I feel sorry for those guys in this case. I mean, they did their jobs and they're getting screwed for it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and on those lines, Twitter was told it had to pay $600,000 to an ex-worker who was dismissed for not responding to Elon Musk's extremely hardcore demand. This is not in the U.S. But what they did is he sent out that email that said that you have to do hardcore or leave. And you have to say yes or click yes that you're in for hardcore. And that was his words, by the way, not ours. And the guy didn't click yes. So he got a notice of termination like 2 days later or something. And he sued because he's like, I didn't say I was quitting. I just didn't respond to an email, and they lost in court. So
he lost his job to the tune of $600,000 because that's what Twixter has to pay him for unfairly firing him.
Yes.
So drinks are on Gary Rooney for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. So that he got, because we know that he's messed over a lot of the employees on there when he fired them. So I like that he had to pay someone out.
Okay, we're getting close on time here. I want to jump to a couple googly stories, like specifically googly stories, and this was a neat one. So AI overviews is changing, and it's changing as we go along. It might even look different at the end of this core update than it does today. The composition of them, the how they get composed, what they look like, et cetera. The search results page might look completely different a month from now than it does right now. But as of right now, as you can imagine, there are people who are exhaustively studying AI overviews, trying to generate them on any search term they can, and then dig into and see what's in them. That's really hard for individuals to do, but when you work with a massive platform that, you know, can ream its way through 100,000 or so different keywords, or tens of thousands of keywords, in a couple of days, it's much easier to do. SEO Clarity, Mark Trappenhagen, has come up with, we got to talk to him about this really soon too.
It is a study of 36,000 keywords and URLs shown up in AIOs. And by the way, though, this could change next week because it changes probably every couple months. Originally, in the AI overviews, it was very rare that the links came from the top 10. I think it was something like 10% or something. Now, almost all the links come from the 10 top Google search results. And actually, though, I could see this one holding because they've had so many issues with bad content getting into the AI overviews, you know. Drink a gallon of urine for your kidney stones.
Well, I don't know why they did this. Why didn't they go this way in the first place? It would make the most sense, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah.
Like, seriously.
It's a large language model, but we know there's this kind of a hybrid. So it does predictive text. So the idea is that you just ground it in documents that they pull back. But they didn't integrate it with the scoring systems. And now it looks like that they are. And that makes sense because at least if you're getting it from the top 10 most of the time, the link, obviously it's not the content because they're rewriting content and it's predictive text. So, but the link that goes with it, that grounds the search to make sure it's more accurate, would be better pulled from the top 10 or 20 results than it would be from Reddit and how you glue cheese on pizza. So
let's assume Mark's initial research is true because it's Mark. He's thorough with his numbers. He's thorough with his research, but let's assume it holds. Okay.
Yeah.
Just for this, and it might not. As Christine said a moment ago, it may not, but let's assume it does for the sake of this conversation. This adds a whole new dimension to writing content for SEO friendly content. This is an incredible discovery.
Oh, definitely. But it's like everything else in Google. Like, John came out this week and said your core update will affect your link presence in AI overviews, right? It already affected in news. It already affects it in Discover. If you're suppressed by an algorithm, change, you won't show up in those things as well, if at all. So to take it from the top 10 and then base it on scoring makes so much more sense, because then you're going to be pulling sites that Google already has evaluated. And then you know that they're most likely at least decent, and they're not going to tell people to drink a gallon of urine. So I think it's a great discovery. I hope it stays. I think it's more likely, like I said, than others to stay, because it's based on the fear of pulling back that really erroneous information, which caused them to pull back on AI overviews.
In the
So,
first place, yeah. Well, also, they're just disastrous rollouts in May
correct.
when they had the CEO up on stage bragging it would give you the moon and the sun, and it ended up describing Pluto to you.
Yeah, I would say the most important thing, like anything, is do well in Google search, and you'll do well in, you'll do better in Discover, better in news, better in AI overviews, because that's now going to be one of the pre-vetting, circumstances to get your links into that AI overview.
Well, so do well in Google, do well in AI overviews. Google has noted that quality is important. Feature snippets, rich results. That's part of my describe everything strategy. If it even looks like it might move, describe it. We're gonna get Mark on as soon as we can get Mark to agree to come on. That's an absolute promise. I'm going to talk to him about it tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, definitely. And
Okay.
then, yeah, go ahead.
Where to? No, I was going to ask you, where do you want to go?
Let's do a few more Google things. We do have to hit Google Pixel before we leave today. Let's see. Let's do the fast stories real quick and then go back, because we only have a few fast stories today. So Google is putting your related searches on a timeline on the sidebar. I saw the view of this. I don't know how helpful. I don't know if I need a timeline of what I search for. Do you need a timeline of what you search for?
And you know what? In some cases, that may be really useful when I'm doing serious research. That could be useful.
But the
How do I get
timeline?
from A to B to C to D?
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
I could see it in that application.
But
If
it
I
doesn't
was
have.
looking for industrial parts, I could see that being. But I don't know.
Apparently,
Whoever
there's no
whoever
option. Go ahead. Go
sorry,
ahead. Sorry
whoever
about
crafted
that. I stepped over you.
this had a reason for crafting it, and it is a solution to somebody's problem. I'm just curious what the problem was.
Yeah, and it takes up a lot of retail space, and it's pinned, and apparently there's no way to make it go away. I think that's the biggest problem I have with Google's additions lately. There's no way to make it go away. Open up an AI overview and it's 6,000 pixels. You can't shrink it back. Put
Well,
timeline in the sidebar, you can't remove it. Like
wait
Google,
for that
allow
score
people.
update. It'll probably
Yeah.
change.
Allow people to close things that they don't want, because you don't always know every use case. We also have AI overviews are getting a listen button. This is not new. This is just new on AI overviews, and it's only in regions like India. I could see that being good, especially if people have disabilities. They can listen to the AI overview as opposed to having to read the whole thing. And some of them are quite long. So
Now,
then.
can you interrupt the AI overview as it's reading to you and argue with it, or get it to expand your queries? I hope you can.
I don't know. I don't think so. I only
If you're
saw
gonna
a
let me
link.
if you're
I
gonna
looked
let
at
me
the.
talk to this thing, you better let me argue with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I saw the listen button, but I didn't see any controls. But maybe there are controls I didn't see because I couldn't replicate it. So this week, Google Analytics was missing data from 2 days, but it came back. So if you were seeing missing data this week from Google Analytics, it should be back by now. Google Search Local Pack is getting a UX update. It's really hard to describe this thing. Lots of things move around and shift, and I have gotten it, and I personally hate it. But we'll see if people like it, because I don't like that much shifting. Like when you have your website, they get you for, CLS shifting on your web page, and that's bad. But apparently, their new Mattis thing is completely a CLS nightmare. So Unanswered comments from Martin Split on your website. I don't know where this came from, because I thought at first when they said Google unanswered comments don't hurt your search rankings, I thought they meant on Google Local or Google Business, right? But no, if you have a blog and you don't answer people's comments somewhere in the universe, people thought that that hurts your rankings. Let people know. It absolutely 100% does not hurt your rankings. Google does not care if you answer
blog content. This is the comments. SEO world. I could see somebody coming up with that and saying it and other people believing it. What I want to know is, how did it filter up to Martin's level to make him comment on it?
I do not know. Maybe it came in like search hours or something.
And moreover, what are they looking at questions that come in and they like, what's it, a filter? Like, anyway, it doesn't matter. Whatever. It just seems like a really silly one to.
It's just a weird one. It's one of those, like, why do we even have to cover it? But we do, because Martin had comments. So obviously people are worried about this. I'm not going to get into details here because you have to read the LinkedIn to see it. But
this is actually pretty cool.
This is really cool. Kaya Faber of Grow Therapy put out a very cool bookmark and hack so that when you go to archive.org, you can get a list of every URL that they used on a website, plus the key timestamp, original URL for that page, and MIME temp and status code. And it's all put out in TXT output. So if you want to get a lot of information about a web page that you're working on and with the history of it and every URL change, this is a good way to do it. But you have to look at you have to get the JavaScript from Kyle. So that's on LinkedIn. So it's Kyle Faber, Faber, Kyle, Kyle, from Grow Therapy. So, and if you do go to his page, let him know we sent you.
And if you don't get the JavaScript from Kyle Faber, what you do know now is this information is available to you at archive.org. Kyle Strip will just get it all for you.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. He will. That's pretty awesome. I think that's such a cool, like a cool little thing. So two more stories I think we need to cover. Google Discovered, currently not indexed.
I was just there. I'm really pleased about this.
Yeah, so it's been Discover not indexed. I show it to people all the time because when you're in Google Search Console and they have that little question mark and it says like learn more, go to that because then you get the documentation, right? So basically it means you have a quality issue with the web page. Your server is too slow for Googlebot, or Google needs more time to index the pages. So basically, if you have a lot of Google Discovered currently not indexed pages, there's something most likely wrong with your website. And you can read what got from Barry reported on it, what Martin said in detail on how to help resolve that. But basically, quality issue with the pages, server too slow for Google, or Google needs more time. Generally, though, it's one or two, because it needs more time is generally because your site is slow. Time to first byte is huge on this. Google, if your time to first byte is slow, and meaning over 600 milliseconds, Google often will not even crawl those pages. It will not even crawl those pages and won't index those pages because they have an indication your site is super slow because your server is super slow, or something that's being served on your first load of your page is super, super slow. So I have someone diagnose that the other day, and there was 250 kilobytes of information they were trying to serve at one time when the handshake happened between Google, between the site and server.
Google's like, I'm not dealing with this.
Yeah, that was taking like, it's taking almost a minute to get the time first byte, the first byte back. First byte is just the first pixels it gets back from a website. So so check those things. If you have Discovered, currently not indexed, and on the other ones, they've been updating the documentation. So when you're in GSC, just click on the little question mark icon, learn more. I forget exactly how it's presented, but you can get the details on the other ones too.
Well, the cool thing is they're updating all this documentation. Crawled but not indexed is an interesting read as well, and actually a much more interesting file to look at. If they're crawling your pages but not indexing them, there's a quality issue, a speed issue, or a relevance issue. That's very frequently a content thing, and it's something you need to check on.
It will really help you, especially during these updates, if you have a core update issue and you go and find you have a bunch of crawled not indexed or discovered, then you know you probably have some sort of very specific issue, and those will point you to which one. Generally speaking,
But again, before you go investing a whole bunch of time freaking out and doing a whole bunch of work to correct the issue, give it a week or two to settle down to make sure that this really is your problem.
100%. Also, Google has said another one, I'm not sure why this came up, but many no index and no follows inside your site do not signal quality issues. That was by Martin Split as well. That is not a low quality content signal. Yeah, there are many good reasons.
There could be very good reasons for this.
Very good reasons.
Now, remember, every time you get a, you make the crawler commit to doing another hop through a 301, through a redirect, there's consequences for that. There's, you know, you got to do your own calculations. How many 301s do you really want?
Yeah, and after six, they stop following. So,
but again, it's not like having them is a mark against you. There's a very good reason to have them.
So, yeah, and this is just no index and no follow. So, like, if you no index a page, you can no index a million pages. Google isn't going to be crawling those pages after it gets and verifies that the no index is real. Sometimes they'll keep crawling the page for a while to make sure the no index is real. You didn't make a mistake. And no follows are just saying don't follow these links. They actually make you do real no follows on anything that's paid for. So they definitely don't.
Absolutely.
Negative. Yeah, it's not a low quality signal at all. Google doesn't care. Just be careful if you have.
You know what? I was making a mistake there. There was another story about managing 301s and 404s that I wanted.
Oh, that'll be for next week.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll deal with that one next week, certainly.
Yeah, we'll do that next week. Go ahead.
One thing that Google might look at with the use of no index. This is why it may have come up. If you're trying to use no index and no follow to PageRank sculpt, I don't think Google's going to mark against you because I don't think they're actually going to care.
They don't care, yeah. But you're right.
But if somebody from Google does notice, I guarantee you they're going to spend a bit of time laughing.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've said for years page sculpting doesn't really work anyways because you really don't know how we crawl and evaluate your links. So, but yeah, exactly. It's not an issue. One final thing. First, we forgot to thank our sponsors, Wix Studio and Audience Key. Jim, do you want to take that?
I want to personally thank both Wix Studio and Audience Key for sponsoring Webcology. Amazingly great stuff to say about both products. Wix has come such a long way in the last couple of years, in the last 5 years, to develop a truly useful product and to start communicating with its user base in extraordinary ways. And Audience Key, I mean, my goodness, content is everything right now, especially in the midst of or figuring out what's happening after this core update. Audience Key makes content management and effect and efficacy on your website much, much easier.
It does. It simplifies. It also shows you what keywords are matched by intent to your pages, and you can track those very simply. You can see if a page goes down because of shifting keywords or if the keyword's not effective anymore. So it's really good. It lets you get a really, it's like five tools and puts them all into one, and it's definitely very reasonably priced. And they'll help you set up everything. So if you go to Audience Key and you're like, I just don't know if I know how to work with this, they will get on the phone with you and they will do a demo and they will teach you how to use the product. So it's really great. And Tom, who runs it, is just an awesome, awesome guy. So we're very thankful for our sponsors, of course. And the last story I think we have to cover before we go, and if you have any others, let me know. But I do think we need to mention the Google Pixel rollout, Pixel Studio.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah, Google's sets of AI tools.
Yeah. Remember all those problems they had before?
I'm sure they're going to start have really a bunch of them again.
Well, these are tested rollouts, really. Come on, guys. So apparently in their new AI studio in the Pixel, you could make images. It lets you make these like cool images like all the other, you know, generators do. And unfortunately, its safeguards are not great. So the author was able to, Chris Smith from BGR, was able to generate SpongeBob dressed as a German soldier from World War II with a swastika. Elmo drunk, driving, and holding a beer. Mr. Krabs with an AK-47. Mickey Mouse dressed as a slave owner. Pikachu smoking a blunt while on a motorcycle, has sunglasses and is holding a gun. Paddington Bear on a crucifix. One, you're not supposed to be able to use any copyrighted content on the app, but if you see the photos, it's pretty amazing what they look like. And Yeah, so if you have kids in your family or something and they have Pixel Studio, you may want to make sure they're not generating really crazy stuff. And why can't they get this right, Jim? Why is
Well,
Google keep rolling out stuff with these disastrous AI rollouts? But I'm literally looking at the picture of Velmo drinking a beer.
it sounds like a couple of the descriptions there were actually kind of right on. It sounds like a couple of them were very disturbing too. They can't get it
Yeah.
right because people are going to push boundaries, and no matter how many safety rails you put on. The it's really hard to control
But these aren't like
crawlers
sophisticated prompts. These are like,
absolutely, and it's really, really hard to control a how does I'm trying to phrase this. Digital things happen at the speed of light. Information is impossible to suppress. No matter how many guardrails you put on it, the only way to prevent an AI from following prompts that is given by a knowledgeable user is to limit the corpus of knowledge it trains on.
Well,
If you
also though it
can't
can, go ahead,
have
sorry.
strict limits on that corpus of knowledge, you've got to accept that virtually anything can happen, and you're going to be reacting to what the users do more than you are dictating the parameters in which they can do
Well, but
it.
also
And
they do filter on the way in and out. Like they'll change your prompts. And
people find ways around it anyway.
apparently in this one, according to the author, they generate pictures of weapons, drugs, things when specifically asked. They don't seem to have filters on it. So they seem to have like really missed on the red team,
Well,
their
in that case, they
checklist
didn't
is
care
here.
in the first place.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
sorry. I'm sorry. I was operating under the assumption they cared.
Yeah, and you're right. And you're right. What you said is right. I mean, that's true if they were being responsible. And again, this is where the California law would come into effect, right? Are you being responsible? But they also had explicit photos that he did not publish of like school shootings and stuff where you could create that. So yeah, Google did better. Like if someone
Indeed.
puts in like AK-47, they probably shouldn't be able to create a picture of it with Elmo. That's a pretty simple, security check. Elmo, list of words you do not allow Elmo to appear with. Beer and guns would probably be two of the things on that list. Sloth stickers, can we use that? No, we don't allow people to generate sloth stickers. And most of the AI generation tools don't allow you to do things like that. So it's just kind of crazy how bad Google's been at responsibility and checking their own work for the last year. So anyway, but yeah, so I'm sure this will be patched sometime soon because they're going to get a lot of publicity off of it. So in the meantime, if you have Pixel, you can have some fun with it, I guess. So
Although you're probably advised to keep that fun confined to your computer hard drive if you're creating
yes.
crazy stuff using copyright images. And I'm sure people listen to that going, well, if I can do that, what else can I do?
Yeah,
Keep that on your
exactly.
hard drive too.
Yeah,
Um,
don't, yeah. Certain things
the,
should
the,
not be
the,
made public. Certain things you shouldn't be
the,
generated at all, but.
not just that, just the deep trouble that is coming down the pipe for people who violate laws that might not even been written yet. They're
Yeah,
coming.
so true.
Don't violate
Very
them.
true. Very true.
Okay, we got to get moving. We've definitely gone over time. But this has been a kind of a weird out of time edition of Webcology. Take a step out and just one last time, Aunt Linda. You were an early adopter of the internet, and your voice will be missed. Biggest love on your next journey. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology on WMR.fm. This show was recorded on Sunday, the 25th of August, rather than Thursday, the 22nd. We're going to be back in the studio next Thursday, re-recording our show, and recording Webcology live at our regular time. And until then, be kind to each other, rank well, do great things, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.